Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Now, if you were listening to Rachel before the break and our conversation there about what she went through, and if you feel you need to speak to somebody, if you go to rte.ie/helplines, you'll find all of the information there that you need. Ian Robertson, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Trinity College and author of How Confidence Works, is with me in the studio for the latest instalment in our series looking at all of the big emotions. And Ian, we have had some difficult emotions, which we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, but today we're focusing on happiness, which is a lovely place to be.
Yeah, what a nice emotion. A complex one, Claire. Yeah, there seems that there are three types of happiness. One is the, if someone asks, how happy are you? It's called your evaluation, your life evaluation. You kind of say, well, taking a perspective, how happy are you in life? And that tends to be something that's very correlated with, up to a point, with our wealth, both across nations and within the nation. And then there's a second type, which is our moment-to-moment happiness. You know, if someone sends us a text, at this moment, what's your mood?
One to ten, rate yourself.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And, you know, how happy are you? And that is closer to what's the mood we're in during the day. And that, you know, you're just having a chat with a friend and a laugh, or you're having that cup of tea, or you're looking at that bird, you know, out in the tree in the street. These little moments, that's the kind of moment-to-moment happiness.
And that's different to the first one, because the first one is about evaluating how happy you are in your life.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It's a kind of more global assessment of where you are, and it's affected a lot by your perceived status and by your actual wealth up to a point. It's kind of linear. So the poorer countries, people evaluate their happiness as being lower than wealthier countries on average.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. But, evaluation of your life is the first one. Moment-to-moment happiness is the second one. And what's the third one?
The third one is, the Greek word is eudaimonic happiness, which is it's the more profound and deepest, a sense of purpose in life. So the first two are more hedonic, the more the kind of raw pleasure, if you like, related to hedonic happiness. Mm-hmm. This is a more deeper kind of sense of purpose in life. So you may not be that happy at the moment, but you may have a very strong sense of purpose. For instance, serving your family or serving your work or serving your community, or feeling that you have a role or a purpose in life. And that's the Greeks regarded that as a pretty profound and important kind of happiness.
Okay, so there are the three different types. You touched on wealth there and perceptions of happiness in the developing world. Now, we know the old phrase, money can't buy you happiness, but...
But, you know, both within countries and across countries, that kind of evaluation, life evaluation measure of happiness tends to go quite strongly with just the average income. Up to a point.
What's the point?
Well, it tends to be around, it varies, 70,000 a year or something like that. And beyond that, there isn't a linear increase of happiness with wealth.
But so the very rich people aren't necessarily
not very necessarily happy at all. In fact, those of us who've been watching Succession and things like that.
That's great, isn't it?
That actually, you know, because you know, the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not money, it's the love of money. And for sure, money has drug-like qualities. And there's nothing like addiction, including to money, to suck away happiness as well. Because that the addictive cycle is a huge...
Talking about Succession, that you know, that chase for the win, and it's often the chase for the financial win when it comes to people who are pursuing wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see looking in on it, that's not going to bring you happiness. But for some people, they absolutely 100% believe that that's the route to happiness.
Oh, yeah. And it really is a quasi-addictive thing. They're almost like heroin addicts, people who search and strive for power and money in that way. Because it's an appetite, because of the way the brain works and because of the way the reward system works, if you feed it so immediately and so strongly with such big rewards, eventually it develops tolerance, so nothing is ever enough. It's an appetite that cannot be satisfied. Mm-hmm. And so we wonder why does Logan Roy continue to want more and more power? It's because he is nothing without this. He has become this craving for more power, more money.
Is there a similar chemistry at play when it comes to gambling then?
Oh, totally. I mean, many years ago, I've worked with compulsive gamblers, and there's little difference between them and heroin addicts. And that's because the compulsive gambling acts in exactly the same reward network in the brain. The dopamine system gets essentially distorted by the need for greater and greater bursts
of this
intense hedonic pleasure of the win.
Okay.
But if you feed it in that way, it becomes an addictive cycle, and that just sucks away your happiness.
So let's come back then to the right way to pursue the moment-to-moment happiness. There are very simple things that can bring us happiness.
Yes. So the big things are other people. That's the main, so we're a social species. And our connections with other people are the greatest source of meaning and therefore of happiness. And being kind and being altruistic actually produce chemical effects in the brain that lift our mood. So that's one. Just being with other people and being kind to other people and being generous to other people and thinking of other people takes us out of ourselves. And that's quite helpful. We'll talk about attention in a moment, but take it out of ourselves.
Does that include involvement in your community then?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's good scientific evidence of voluntary work. Volunteering makes people feel better, makes them feel a sense of purpose, which goes to the eudaimonic happiness as well as the moment-to-moment.
And what about going for a walk? Sitting on a bench and listening to the birds, simple things.
Yeah, so there'll be a lot of people listening who do mindfulness, maybe in apps or in courses, and that's really important. That's about controlling your attention. And the evidence is that a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. If your mind wanders a lot without you wanting it to wander, it will tend to wander to negative memories and negative thoughts, and that will pull down your mood. So the evidence is that if your mind is on the task you're doing, whether that task is mundane, like washing the dishes, the fact that your mind is on that task and you're just enjoying the suds and washing the dishes, that means your attention is focused on that, and your attention is not available to go walk about to negative thoughts and worries that will pull down your mind. So there's good scientific evidence published in the journal Science that if you just keep your mind, try and learn to keep your mind on the everyday moments of life, that's a huge protector against the emotions being dragged down.
I find that so interesting, that if your mind is wandering and you're not focused, you gravitate towards negative thoughts.
Yes, and that's because our mind, there's a part of the brain called the anterior cingulate, which is a conflict detector, and it kind of prioritizes your attention being dragged to unresolved conflicts to try and sort them out. And unresolved conflicts tend to be associated with negative emotions, and so if our attention is going walkabout, it will tend to be dragged by the anterior cingulate into these unresolved problems.
Mm-hmm.
Which will then produce a cascade of memories and a cascade of thoughts and a cascade of future worries, you know, about the what's going to happen in the future.
I wonder what that says about us all on the phone all the time, scrolling.
You're absolutely right, because attention is a muscle, has to be exercised. And if we are constantly, even if we're not looking at our phone, even if there is the expectation that an alert might come in, that saps our attention.
Wow.
There's a part of our brain scanning, waiting for the beep to happen. And that subtracts from this attention, which is the critical road to emotional health and to being efficient and productive in life, is being able to control your attention. because otherwise your brain, we've talked about this before, does time traveling into the future, future worries into the past, past failures, past worries, past negative experiences. Whereas if you can learn to control your attention, which is what mindfulness training is very, very good. There are many other ways of doing it, not just mindfulness training, but that's an incredibly widely available and popular way of doing this. It's a way of learning to keep your attention in the present moment. And if you can do that, you really will boost your happiness and reduce your chance of low mood.
Look, we're only really learning, aren't we, about the damaging impacts of having the phone on all the time, having the alerts popping up on your watch as I have when I bother to charge it.
Yeah.
But we were talking about the right to disconnect from work earlier with an employment solicitor. This is all part of that, isn't it? Because you're fired up all the time.
Absolutely, and that makes people very tired. It makes people fatigued because there's no downtime for the brain, if you like. Particularly if you're working at home, and there's no, you're not getting on a train or a bus to go home as that kind of punctuation of your day, if you like. And so you're still kind of half working, and your brain's half working at 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. And then because it's still working, your brain's noradrenaline system is kept switching on, and sleep requires that system to be closed down.
Switch off completely.
But instead, we wake up we don't get to sleep, or we wake up in the middle of the night because that's been inadequately shut down because it's been constantly stimulated. The other thing is multitasking. Our brain is, our conscious attention is only capable of one thing at a time.
Really?
Yeah, we cannot.
Even if you're female?
Even if you're female. Because what you're doing when you think you're multitasking, you're actually switching rapidly between different tasks. And switching task is enormously costly for the brain. It's metabolically and costly. It's like a production line changing from producing one thing to producing another. It has to be retooled and restarted as a whole. Your brain has to do that every time you switch from writing that email to checking your Facebook alert. That switch costs
you
energy in the brain, and that will contribute to your fatigue. And the more you do that, the more fatigued you're likely to be. In the end, in extreme forms, it can lead to a kind of burnout as well.
Okay, which is a very dangerous place to be.
Yes,
isn't it?
Exactly.
Burnout.
Yeah.
So coming back then to happiness, in order to get to that point where we are being mindful, we're focusing on what we're doing, even if it's doing the dishes or making bread, we have to switch off all of the other distractions.
Yes.
And that's a learned process, isn't it?
That's a learned process. It's a habit of attention. I remember many years ago working with someone with a brain injury, and that this person has a very poor attention because of that, and they wanted to study to become a bookkeeper and an accountant, and but they just couldn't concentrate for more than about 20 seconds reading the text before their attention went. So I just developed a very simple habit training program, behavioral shaping program, where I just set them and said, okay, read for 20 seconds and then stop. Don't allow, you take charge of your attention. Stop before your attention wanders. Do that a number of times. When you've done that, let's increase it to 25 seconds. And so on. And then we introduced the distraction of listening to the radio at the same time to try and train the attention in spite of distraction. And we got that person back to where they could read a book for 20 minutes, and they managed to get their accountancy. So that was us shaping and training the attentional muscle, just as you might train your physical muscles in the gym.
And that's what we all must do, is what you're saying, most of us. Yeah.
Yeah, we must do that. We must feel in control of our attention. To the extent that we feel in control of our attention, we'll feel in control of our emotions, including happiness.
What about when you buy something and you get a hit of happiness and you think, ah, I've spent money, consumerism, done, happy.
Yeah.
Is that right and true?
Well, yes. Buying something gives you a little biological lift in your brain. It will give you that feeling of pleasure at possession. That will give you a little hit of dopamine activity in your brain. That will lift your mood. And that's fine. We've all had that. And it's great, you know.
Lasts about 5 seconds.
Yeah, well, no, I bought a pair of new shoes I really liked on Saturday. And I still get pleasure because they're lovely to walk on. So it's a question of you know, the way that gaming apps and gambling, you know, online gambling apps work, they work on the principles of behavioural psychology, Skinnerian psychology of reinforcement learning, where it's the precise timing and frequency of reinforcements you get, in other words, these kind of little hits of pleasure.
The reward.
The way they are presented to you will shape your behavior and shape your brain's response. And you know, all these online gaming apps and the gambling apps, unfortunately, have harnessed the very fine science of behavioral psychology to make people go into behaviors. Repeat the behaviours
yeah.
and spend money that they shouldn't be spending in many cases. And this is a real harnessing of some very primitive reinforcement systems in the brain.
You mentioned happiness that we experience through our connections with others. What about when a child achieves something? Is that a genuine happiness hit for parents?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, our children, for most of us, are part of our egos. You know, they're not separate.
No romanticism there, Ian.
Exactly. You know, our child's achievement is our achievement. So it's not entirely selfless. So shall we say, if anyone who's seen parents on the side of the football field will know.
Yeah,
it's them, you know, it's their victory as much as their child. But one of the great sources of happiness also is compassion, is taking the generosity of seeing other people's pleasures or achievements as benefiting you, because, if you like, the overall sum of human happiness, you might say, is increased if they're happier, if they've had something good happening to them. That actually ultimately benefits you. You know, that's one mental framing to get away from things of resentment or jealousy or envy.
It's a virtuous happiness, yes, circle.
Yes.
Is there a secret to happiness then, to finish, Ian?
No secret. There's lots of things, including physical exercise. Goal, the one thing we haven't mentioned, goals, setting goals for yourself, particularly in a COVID working at home with the punctuation of life, the punctuation marks of life are missing, the external ones. We have to impose them ourselves in order to get that feeling of progression. You know, we have to create breaks, create little, the equivalent of the water cooler moments that would happen in the office that are now not missing during the day. These little senses, okay, I finished that chunk of work. We have to create them artificially ourselves to create our own rhythm, to break up the day so that we get little senses of achievement, little mini success bursts. Right, I got that done. The trouble is, with work can too easily turn into a blur where you feel as if nothing is ever finished, and that really leads to fatigue and burnout and low mood.
Ian, it's been really interesting to talk to you as always. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. That's Ian Robertson. And if you want to listen back to that item, and you may well do, rte.ie/podcasts is where you go to, or wherever you get your podcast from. Ian, thank you very much. Let's take a break.